Life is Short is so pleased to have Bud Light Seltzer as our presenting sponsor.
Listeners know that we're big fans of Bud Light Seltzer.
It's a delicious hard seltzer from Bud Light, but it has no Bud Light in it.
That's right. Each one is just 100 calories, 5% alcohol by volume, and gluten-free.
The Retro Summer Pack has been our go-to drink. It really has. We've been lucky enough to like spend some time with family at the lake and doing all those summer things. Never far away is our Retro Summer Pack.
I mean, I love that summer ice. It's so hard to beat that. I know you like the blue raspberry.
A relative of ours, they went crazy for the cherry limeade and thought, how are you not enjoying this one the most?
So we've loved partnering with Bud Light Seltzer to bring you some of our favorite summer memories, and we've got more in store later in the show, so stay tuned.
We surveyed two people and asked them to come up with who won Family Feud recently.
That's a really roundabout way of bragging that we won Family Feud.
You don't both have to win Family Feud. We did. It was so exciting. And the most exciting thing is that we won it for the Hole in the Wall Gang Camp. What a great charity. They just lost one of their main camps in Connecticut to a fire, and they're starting to rebuild. They started August 18th, so I want to wish them good luck and pat ourselves on the back a little bit.
And technically, this is the second opening of a show
we've
talked about Family Feud.
That's being a big deal for us.
But you know what? How many times you on Family Feud in your life?
I know. We should milk it.
It's worth a double story.
In fact, I dare say we might talk about it again.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream. Doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-shaboom.
You're listening to Life is Short. I'm your host, Justin Long.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Doo-doo-doo-doo-shaboom.
And with me, as always, is my fellow Family Feud winning co-host and brother, Christian.
No one will ever be able to take that away from us. We're champions.
Oh, didn't that feel so... I mean, it's a little embarrassing how good it felt to me.
When it happened?
Yes.
It felt really good. But, you know, also it's
it was like relief more than anything.
Because the two of us did the fast money, the bonus round.
Oh, man.
And for me, not only is it nerve-wracking being on TV and having to answer those questions with all the, you know, the lights on you.
It's also an iconic set.
Oh, yeah. It was nerve-wracking.
Yeah, it was.
And all this money is on the line for this great charity, Hole in the Wall Gang. So I was nervous. As the bonus round was going, I knew my first few answers were terrible. And I started to think, what if I shit the bed on this to the point where I get like 7 points in the entire round? Because I knew the first three were going to yield almost nothing.
The first couple were rough. And watching it back, because I didn't watch that part. I was in a booth. I was like backstage with headphones on. So I wasn't watching you do that. So it was really cool to get to see you slash... It was fun.
You could tell I was nervous.
Yeah, yeah. And especially after those first few answers, because I knew you were upset with yourself.
Jay. I mean, the dumbest thing I said was...
It was Jay what? Jay blank.
Jay blank.
Yeah, we asked 100 people, Jay, and then Jay, you know, I said Jay walking.
I said Jay Muse because I had just been talking to him. He's the one I did the face-off against.
Jay Muse was like Kevin Smith's team. So we played against Kevin Smith.
And so he was fresh in my head.
Jay played... For those of you who don't know, Jay played Jay from... Jay and Silent Bob, Kevin Smith's movies. And so Jay Muse was very excited that you guessed him.
Very excited.
I think the number one answer was Jay Leno.
Uh-huh.
I said Jay walking. I wonder who else was on that list.
Anyway.
Jay Lowe. Our mother was like, Jay Lowe. She kept yelling, Jay Lowe at the
screen. Really?
I saw it with our mom. What did James think you saw with James?
James was on our team. Very happy. Yeah, I thought he did well. He had a good showing.
Yeah, he had a funny moment. They cut a lot of the interplay.
Yeah. Cousin Rich was great.
Shout out to Cousin Rich. He really helped us.
Diana was fantastic. We had a good team. And here's the point.
Yeah.
All details aside, we all had good moments, not good moments.
I had some embarrassing.
Here's the point. We won.
Right. Here's the bigger point. Hole in the Wall Gang won.
Why are we giving an update on our weekend?
Oh, very well said.
Why are we giving a weekend update, if you will?
Well, I'll tell you why. Because our guest today, I almost said tonight. Well, it might be tonight for some of you.
Depends when you want to listen.
Yeah. Our guest right now is, or later, whenever you're listening, is, it used to be the host of Weekend Update on SNL. the very funny, the, God, one of the funniest SNL performers, I think, Cecily Strong. She is...
You slapped your knee as you said her last name.
Yeah, why?
I don't know, but I'm afraid that it didn't come through.
Okay, it's Cecily Strong.
Yes.
And then I slapped it right after the Strong.
You said it, slapped it on the Strong. Oh, you said weird. Cecily Strong.
Strong.
Who cares?
Cecily Strong is known for doing characters that are a little bit more avant-garde, or not avant-garde.
They're very specific.
Yes, yes. The one that comes to mind is the girl you wish you never started a conversation with at a party. And she does a lot of, she does Jeanine Pirro, she does...
Great impressions.
Great impressions.
And she's pretty brilliant on that show.
She is. She's always been one of my favorite performers on the show, but now she's written a book that is, I can't recommend enough. We talk a lot about it today. It's called This Will All Be Over Soon. And she wrote it right before, during the pandemic, actually. It was, her life was, she was going through a lot of, dealing with a lot of tragedy and some romance and a lot. She was dealing with a lot, as we all were at the
heart. It's not funny?
It is.
It is?
It is funny. It's heartbreaking. It's very honest. It's written in a very real, it's raw. It's I loved it. It's all kind of predicated on the death of, she lost her cousin in January, 2 months before the lockdown. And then she started a relationship that was kind of, she details it all like very honestly and in many cases very humorously. And she uses, it's written in journal form. She uses text conversations that she had with her cousin. It's if anyone's going through anything like this, it's a great examination of grief. It's a very personal, I think beautiful examination of it. And regardless of what your relationship is to grief and however you're dealing with that, everyone's gone through the pandemic. Everyone's gone through the experience of being in lockdown. And so I think it really, I think everyone could get something out of this book.
Okay. That's an endorsement.
It. Yeah. Oh, I loved it. So we're going to talk about that and SNL and so much more with the very bright, very, very funny, and now I know great author, Cecily Strong.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do, 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 shaboom.
For all the shorties that want voluminous, fanned-out lashes, ooh, this ad is for you. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara creates corner-to-corner panoramic lash volume. Their tapered brush catches every single lash, even those pesky corner lashes. You know who you are, corner lashes. With the Panorama Mascara, you'll easily achieve that effortless, false lashes look. It's one of Christian's favorite looks. Plus, it lasts up to 24 hours and is clump and flake resistant. And just when you thought it couldn't get better, it does. The Panorama Mascara is a lot more affordable than other luxe mascaras. And honestly, it probably does a better job. It's affordable, but it's deceptive because it comes in a premium gold luxe packaging. So if you want a mascara that can do it all, volumize, lengthen, and stay put all day, you can buy the Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. As a podcast listener, I'm sure you know that audio piques the imagination, like especially this show. So if you really want to feel like you're in the story, check out Audible's collection of brand new exclusive thrillers.
Their titles feature captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. So you'll be kept on the edge of your seat.
Here's an interesting psychological thriller that is out right now. It's an Audible original. It's called Oracle. It follows an FBI psychic who can help solve missing person cases when he touches those close to the victims. But of course, it comes at a cost. He'll see the horrific moments before the victims disappeared.
Shorties, I just got chills. You have to listen along with me. You don't have to.
No.
But I think you should.
Yeah, it'd be fun. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/long or text long to 500-500. That's audible.com/long or text long to 500-500.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom and up we'll meet again.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's such a pleasure because I feel, you've seen What About Bob?
Yeah, of course.
Well, I'm
not crazy.
I know you're not like Bob Wiley, but I keep thinking about that scene maybe because I saw it recently. how adamant he is that people have to get this book. So I keep thinking about him in terms of the baby steps. I'm like, you got to get Cecily's book. I'm holding it up right now. Because it's meant so much to me. It's so beautiful and funny and so honest. It's like odd now to see you because I feel like I know you so well. I'm sure people have been saying that a lot.
You know, it's great because I'm sometimes awkward and you know, I stumble over words. So it's like, I'd rather someone read that and then I can meet them. It's like, okay, yeah. So now you kind of, you know me.
You get it. Talk. Well, what was the impetus for writing it? Was it simply to get these feelings out, get these very raw emotions onto a page?
Yes. I mean, that's what it was at first, for sure. And I think because I'm used to, like, my body is used to writing on a Tuesday, I guess, because of SNL. And then those 2 weeks were just so bad. Those 2 weeks I was quarantined in my apartment. That's how it started, how I started writing and did the essay that went to New York Magazine at first. And then I got some nice response and it felt like people had found things in themselves or it was useful to them. And then that's kind of made me keep wanting to keep right then. No, because it was like worst case scenario. I do therapy.
Right. It's true. I guess this must have been a form of, I mean, you articulate that much better than I just did a couple times in the book. You start speaking to whoever it is you're writing to as though they were an entity, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah. And I think like that was very helpful in a time of, you know, such isolation. And as somebody who's like felt lonely which I think a lot of us do, it's like, I'm having an intimate conversation with somebody. Do you know, I always think of the Regina Spektor song, Aquarius, but she says, dear someone in the shadows.
Yeah.
But like it was a similar thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm an Aquarius, so I have to listen to that song.
You only listen to Aquarius.
In order to get into the club. So, yeah.
The age of Aquarius is, it's written in diary form, but it really did have that feeling of a deeply personal memoir of these diary entries that at times maybe we weren't even meant to be, I wasn't meant to be reading. It was very revealing, but also like you said about other people's response, I had the same one, which is I identified with so much of what you're talking about and certainly you're grappling with grief and during this time in isolation, it was really important to me. I really connected in a way that was comforting. So thank you. And I can't wait for people to read it.
Well, thank you. That's kind of comforting. Felt like, well, that's how I can share him then.
And he strikes me the way you describe him so beautifully. He strikes me as somebody who would have certainly appreciated that and wanted that to be in the world, wanted that to be his legacy.
Absolutely. Great, yeah.
Yeah. It's a beautiful tribute to him. And the text exchange, that's also what struck me was my grandmother died and passed away. And I know you can't, it is a difficult word to say.
Yeah. It's like a weird, harsh word. Yeah.
There's something so definitive and kind of like, it falls with like a thud.
It feels like I say when it's like when you're angry, sad.
Yeah.
That's like when it's like they died, you know, and it's like, and that's like, that happened to me. They died and that happened to me. And like passed away feels more when you're in that place of I'm talking about it in a non-angry way, in a loving way.
Yes. And maybe even in a beginning way, in the way that, you know, that death could be, I'm hoping is just a beginning of something. And something I've been struggling with.
Well, I'm sorry. Also, before I went into that, I'm sorry about your grandmother.
Oh,
it's always tough.
Yeah. It's interesting, Cecily, you know, cause she's, she was 104.
Good genes.
Good genes. I hope I have another, I have another one who's still alive who's 104.
Wow.
I'm sure you're used to this, having lost a couple people actually very close to you. Is that, do you find that you have these kind of pat answers, like for, you know, when you're having small talk about grief, like when somebody says, you mention it as something that happened and they say, oh, I'm so sorry about your grandmother. And I find myself saying, yes, but she was old, you know, she's 104 and But it's almost for them. It's not for you. It doesn't feel like it hurts any less.
Right, right. I think there are different losses, and there are some that are we as a society can sort of feel better about, and knowing that someone, if they've lived a full happy life,
yeah,
and full of joy or love at least. But I do think it's like, I'm always going to say sorry, because it's not like, I don't think it's ever like a piece of cake for anybody.
It's never a pleasant thing.
Still, hopefully. And just like all of us, the dealing with our own mortality, there's always that also. And so it's not easy, even in a very only selfish way, and not bad selfish.
Right.
I just mean, you know, about us.
Well, that's what impressed me, because that's something I've struggled with, and it sounds like you have, and I'm sure we will continue to struggle with mortality. But what really impressed me about Owen and the grace in which he passed away was how there was something very courageous about how he faced it without fear, which to me is like remarkable. I mean, what a testament to a person's character.
I mean, I still don't quite understand it. And, you know, my editor early on was asking me about that. And I was like, well, I don't know. And I really was just trying to explore that, because the idea to me of living with that and not just being stuck frozen. And like,
I have so much
health anxiety. I'm so afraid of it. And it was just like, he said, I'm going to beat it. And that was that.
Well, but also when he realized he couldn't, it was that moment of
unbelievable. Thank you,
where he thought that to me is like, and you talk about him as though he were in terms of him being a superhero and heroic, which that is the, I think that's a true strength and characteristic of a heroic person. You hear about them in movies, and they're portrayed in books and stuff, but to actually know somebody who faced death that way is remarkable.
Yeah. His doctor, that's what Lita brought up at his service. And that is when he was told, just giving the background.
Yeah.
When
Lita,
he was
his
told,
sister, I'm not telling you.
Yes. Who
sorry.
I think of as my sister. We call each other the strong sisters now. But when the doctor had to tell Owen, and he was alone, you know, they weren't in there with him at that point. And she said, we can't shrink your tumor, and there's really nothing left. And, you know, I don't even know how you word that. So I'm not even going to pretend
I know
how to word
I
that.
Know.
That you'll have hours before you slip into a coma and pass away. And she said to Lita, a lot of people try bargaining with you at that moment.
Yes.
It's really tough. And that makes me very sad. And Owen just said, well, thank you for all you've done. And thank you for trying.
Yeah, that's
crazy.
Crazy. I mean, because again, like your writing is so honest, and it's so real that it was easy to put myself there. And Owen's is as well. I mean, I love the way you include text conversations between you and Lita and Owen. And it's that to me is some of the funniest and most heartbreaking stuff, you know. But it's funny. It's you're all such good writers. And that was a moment where I thought I could only hope, I can only aspire to have that kind of courage, you know.
Yeah.
That grace. I think about the end. I think about how will I accept the fate that's coming to all of us. I think about it a lot, and to read about somebody who chose that path, who was so courageous, it's inspiring. It was really inspiring.
It's weird. Yeah. And I mean, I don't know about you, but I find it's calming to me too, because I feel like I'm also somebody that for whatever reason throughout my life, there's been times where I'm like, I'll spin myself into this, you know, anxiety attack about dying. And then, you know, the only thing I can, like the one thing years ago I said, it was like, well, all I can wish for myself is that I accept it in that moment, and that there's some kind of, that I'm not scared at the end.
I know. Bargaining is an interesting word. I imagine that's probably right now what I know I would do that.
Well, what if, how about can we just try a surgery?
Yeah.
How about you know?
Yeah. I remember seeing that in Man on the Moon in the Andy Kaufman movie, and how he's, I'll go and do this, and I'll try this experimental thing. And did you have any reservations? Once you decided this was something that you wanted to put out into the world, and you compiled these writings. What were your reservations about sharing it? And also, Cecily, how weird is it now to be talking about something that was, you know, with somebody who's a relative stranger? How weird is it to be talking about something that is so deeply personal?
I'm somebody that can have a 3-hour conversation that I'd be like, well, we're going to stay up all night. Yeah. And we have to talk about this and get hash this out. So that doesn't feel weird to me. I'm okay with sharing with somebody who's not, who wants to share as well. My reservations, I mean, the ones that I feel like aren't tied to any kind of nasty, self-deprecating, negative, you know, thinking about what other people think of me, was just, I just wanted to make sure everybody was okay with me sharing it, you know, because it's like, I'm the one sharing it. It's not really, they're not doing it. And so, and everyone really was, and, you know, Lita and Ed and Laura, I sent everything I wrote pretty much as I was writing it to every person that I mentioned.
Your grandfather, Cecil, struck me as such an interesting, a lot of your relatives. I love that they have these cheeky nicknames for
each
other.
He's Cecil. I will just.
Oh, Cecil.
I'm Cecily. I know it.
Oh, weird.
It's funny. And people will do that the opposite and they'll call me Cecily.
Oh.
Some people, because Cecil DeMille, I know. Who knows?
It's, oh, yeah.
People pronounce their names weird.
That's Cecily Tyson. What are
Cecily? Cecily.
Cecily. Oh, boy.
I is where my E is, and my E is where her I is.
Oh, Lord. Oh, Cecily, Italy.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Stupid. I'm so glad it is out in the world, and I'm glad you had the courage, I guess. I mean, it is courageous to, some of this stuff is not, it's also not all flattering. Was that therapeutic? What did that feel like to describe this burgeoning relationship that was kind of stalling amidst?
Well, definitely. And that was, you know, early on, like there was a fear about writing about that, but it was kind of like, even if it doesn't work out, it's like that part of my story won't change. Then it didn't work out, but I am going through that at the moment. I know a lot of people that have, like I remember people coming to me and saying, I've done the same thing, writing these notes. Mm. And it's sort of, that's there, that little bit of magical realism, like, well, let me just pretend things are great. And here's what I would say to you then.
Yes.
If we were talking. And it's just like giving yourself that a little bit of delusion, but in a comforting way.
It is. It's, I mean, getting anything out. And I imagine being so thorough about your feelings and about what you're going through, getting that out must have been, you must feel connected to strangers. You must feel very, what does it feel like? I've never done anything like this.
Yeah. I mean, certainly I think it's very nice, the connections that we have, and there's been, and I'm sort of, because of Owen, I feel like, and not calling things coincidences, I'm excited about those connections, and it means something to me when people say they felt they related, they understood, and this mattered to them. And then I think also, you know, it is good to get it out there. And I always, my dad and I had a talk about it recently, and he was kind of like, you know, part of it makes me sad or something. And I was like, why? Mm. And he said, because of like the early stuff. And I was telling him, but dad, we are where we are now, which is like, what a happy thing. And it wouldn't, to me, it matters more that we are where we are now because it wasn't always easy. And because it's honest. And so when I say I love you, it's like, I say I love you with all this history. And it's like, it's just more honest. And I think it lets us celebrate more. Like the whole point is to, yes, obviously it's about the tough things, but then the point is to celebrate everything we get to celebrate.
Well, was your father, he was referring to, so, and again, you're very so honest about all this, the divorce, and the most poignant thing, way you described that was doing so through the lens of yard plants. Mm-hmm. You know, you describe your yard, and I grew up in the same way. I had a very similar, my parents were, they were great gardeners, and there was beautiful flowers everywhere, and just over the years, they're still together, but to see that change, that kind of landscaping change, it really struck me. It was really beautiful. Now you say you're struggling to keep basil plants alive. I'm wondering how your green thumb is.
You know, it's not great, but I enjoy it so much. And I'm able to cook with some of the things, and I have calla lilies again. And every now and then, like some lily will pop up and I'm like, I'm pretty sure I planted that. It's like a kid with a science experiment still.
Well, you said it perfectly about the raspberries. I remember that feeling. I still get that feeling sometimes. I have blueberry bushes near where I live in Massachusetts. And yeah, there's a real thrill of just getting to pick them off the bush. And I think I like that idea, which you say so well in the book. You like the idea of eating the raspberries more than the actual fruit.
Yeah.
It's true. It's really
I have a peach tree. For the people that lived here before me had a peach tree, which I didn't know was a thing that you could have in New York, but it's like a similar thing where I'm like taking a bite and it does, you know, I don't know how to grow peaches. So, but I definitely am always like, I'll eat this hard peach because it's here.
Yeah.
I should.
Psychologically, it's like, there's nothing like a ripe peach, but it's really, really
cardboard, hard peach.
Yes. Yeah.
Still tasteless tastes pretty good.
Yeah. There's a little moisture in there. Mm-hmm. Well, it looks very green where you are, Cecily. Are you in, so that's New York?
Yeah. That's Hudson Valley.
Wow. Oh, you're still upstate.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Oh, great. Oh, okay. And also, again, not to dwell, not to labor how much I love the book, but I also loved just getting to relive my own experience in those first few weeks of the pandemic and through your own. And that is something that if you can't relate to the grief part, I would encourage anybody to, you know, start reading it just in the hopes that it might conjure some of your own feelings about those early days of the pandemic. And I realized how much I had buried and how much I wasn't addressing just by reading your book and recognizing similarities. So again, thank you.
I think that's like one of my also favorite things to hear because I worry that like, I see how much everybody's like, well, we're moving on now. We're back open. Everything's fine. And it's sort of, I don't know that we've really taken much time to like, are we fine? We just went through something insane that I think is going to have ramifications. And I wish people would check in with themselves. And it's meant so much anytime someone, there's been moments where people have said to me, like, I'm hearing that, I read that, and I don't think I've been grieving this. And it's like, I hope that people get a moment with themselves to think about it.
I didn't know this, that you were... As a kid, you were obsessed with SNL, but specifically with Phil Hartman. I find that
Love Phil Hartman. It makes
sense, Cecily, because you both have a real connection to the truth. Your writing is this way, but like I always felt that way about your characters. Certainly, the ones on Weekend Update, they felt so, and I'm sure a lot of people agree that they felt so on, they felt so real. They felt like the way people talk, and not even dialed up that much.
Yeah,
and that's what Hartman's felt like to me.
Yes, there's something about, and I think he is similar. It's you're making me think about it, like his just somebody that's like he's this straight white man with confidence who's just like doesn't know what he, like something can be happening in the background and he's like everything is great here, so you know,
yes,
and it's just
yes,
that like assured, it makes me laugh so much. I think like
me
Beck
too.
Is one of Beck Bennett always makes me laugh because he has a similar
He's got that
like I commanding the room and it's like
totally
so confident but wrong.
Yes, that's the best. Everything's under control. Even like Unfrozen Caveman Lawyer was like that, like, well, ladies and gentlemen, you know, like he's kind of blind to the absurdity of it.
Right.
How specific are those characters? Because they feel so, your characters, they feel so specific. The person you don't want to meet at a party, you know, the girl that you got stuck with at a party, is that just an amalgamation of people that you've met?
Yes. And I think it started by making fun of myself and then also thinking about my straight male friends' stories where they like started talking to some girl being like, she's cute. And then like, oh, wow, I can't believe what she just said and I can't get out of this.
I have no experience with that, Cecily. I don't know what you're talking about.
It's funny. Someone asked me like, well, what about, aren't there men like that? I was like, well, usually if a man approaches you, it's like, right away, I was like, I didn't approach him. I'm
right,
not,
right.
How do I
the
get
onus
out of
is
this?
Not,
right.
Right. It's on him.
Yeah. But yeah. I think like, she's certainly more real and specific. And I remember there was someone else on Facebook or something. It really is like, I wrote it in 2012 at first, which is like Facebook was the big social media. And somebody had written around the election, like after Obama won, like, wow, you all seem so happy. And that makes me so sad. And then it was like, What a thing to say. Oh, I guess you're smarter than the rest of us then, if you're sad. Yeah. If you're the guy like in the corner while everyone's dancing, you must be smarter than everyone.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a pride in that. There's a what a weird thing to be proud of and to lord over people.
Right. And just, I think that is so, like someone that checks their phone when they're talking to you, the reason she gets everything wrong is because she's not actually, it's just the only reason she's using any kind of zeitgeisty thing or issue is to just shame the other person you're totally dumb and I'm smart. And now my friend's over there
it's all self-serving. But I feel like Cecily, she's also such a product. That's why that character is, there's something iconic about it because, and so of its time, because she's such a product of social media, you know, like people play that out on social media, but then to have a conversation with somebody who's so used to like either ranting or posting and running away, you know, like that type of communication, it's all like outrage based.
Yes.
So, perfect.
There's a lot of it. And I think and then Kathy Ann, I think is the other one. I would say like probably other characters are bigger and more about getting to be a clown and have fun, but certainly Kathy Ann too was like, I just wanted to have someone who's like, this person is not preaching to you. I just wanted to be like, it's everything that's being called politics lately is like, it's not, that's not politics. That's just like basic human decency. And it was that shouldn't, let's not even argue about that point. Let's have a crack addict tell you that's what that is.
That's really perfect. Yeah.
Do, 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 shaboom.
This segment is brought to you by Bud Light Seltzer's new Retro Summer Pack. These summer days really bring me back, mid to late August, where you feel that the pressure to really like make the most of each summer day.
Here's the biggest problem with that time. Bud Light Seltzer didn't exist yet.
No, unless you had a time machine where you could bring some Bud Light Seltzer back to the 80s.
Most people didn't have that.
Though. No, but now Bud Light Seltzer is kind of doing that with their new Bud Light Seltzer Retro Summer Pack. It's a new tie-dye pack. It features three throwback flavors reminiscent of those summers of yesteryear.
Of yore.
Yeah, the ones where, you know, you're growing up and you just want to play all day. And you can still play. You can play with Bud Light Seltzer now.
The three flavors are Blue Raspberry, Summer Ice, and Cherry Limeade, and I'm happy to report I had each of those flavors yesterday.
Whoa, I almost said it was a rag.
Whilst sitting in a kayak.
Oh, how nice.
It was great.
For the first time ever, fans can also purchase these out-of-sight flavors.
These what?
Flavors that are not within sight. You can buy these new flavors in a new form with Bud Light Seltzer Retro Summer Icicles.
Great for a hot day.
Oh, man. The days have been hot. If you really want to cool down. And again, it's the same flavors, Blue Raspberry, Summer Ice, Cherry Limeade. And those flavors will, I'm sure, spark some summer memories because they taste like childhood.
Yeah. So just grab some friends, play some tunes, and enjoy the vibes.
Get it delivered right to your door. You can find a retailer near you at budlight.com/delivery or pick it up at your local neighborhood grocery store or convenience store.
Or liquor store.
Right. Any store that you have to walk into or get into somehow.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom, and up we'll meet again.
I didn't know this, that you, in high school, you were expelled. You got expelled for bringing weed.
Yeah.
How much weed did you have?
It was an eighth, I think it's like the, and like, when did I last say an eighth? It was like, I haven't said an eighth since 2002.
Since I said a dime bag.
Right. The worst, shittiest as swag weed.
Swag.
Right. And I didn't even have anything to smoke it in, but it was the first bag I'd ever bought. And they found, and we had a new superintendent who was very like zero policy. So I had two other friends get expelled during that time. But of course it was like problematic to me that at the same time, you know, athletes would not get expelled.
Right.
Where it was sort of like, you're important to us and you're not.
How long, Cecily, did you get expelled for?
Well, it wound up being only for that semester because then I was welcome to come back my junior year. But by that point, I felt really bad there. And then I missed too many credits, gym credits. So I was going to have to be a fifth year senior because of gym.
Oh my God.
Consumer education. And it was sort of like, I can do summer school for anything, but like not gym. I can barely do gym as it is.
Oh my God. So did you graduate?
I dropped out my junior year. I was also like struggling with depression at that time.
Yeah.
So I missed like a year at least of, or about a year of school probably total. Wow. And then, but I went to art school my senior year and I did correspondence courses and they don't have gym requirements at art school or consumer ed. So I was able to get the credits I needed and I graduated on time.
Was performing something that you aspired to then? Was that something that you was on the horizon for you? Or?
Oh yeah. I mean, I took my first drama class when I was three at my preschool or something. Yeah. And I did a lot of community theater growing up. So it was,
what's a drama class with three-year-olds? Yeah, what's a drama class? Yeah.
I don't even know. And there were only three of us in the class. And I think we were supposed to do like, and this is like one of those stories that it's like a memory, but it's not really, it's what's been told to me because I was three, but it was, we were supposed to do the Frog Prince, I think, but I didn't like the little boy in the class and he was supposed to kiss me. And I was
you didn't
like,
have chemistry.
We're not doing it. And so we did the Elves and the Shoemaker.
he must have been very disappointed.
Yeah, probably wasn't very nice of me. Yeah.
Sorry if he's listening. Were impressions something that were a part of your repertoire then even? Were you doing impressions of like family members and stuff?
I was, but like I didn't think I was an impressionist, especially when you see like really impressionists on SNL and around. But I mean, like as a little kid, I loved doing impressions, but my impressions were all like the big ones I can remember. I liked doing the guy with the shrunken head in the waiting room from Beetlejuice.
Who
just turns to look at him. Not even the one he steals from with the hair. I liked the little bald guy. It just went like that. And then I also like to do the alien that pops out of his stomach in Spaceballs and then goes, "Hello, honey." Those were my impressions.
That's funny. Yeah, those are great. But it's funny. You said something very, I talked to Bobby Moynihan on this show, but he said something similar. Which surprised me that he sort of downplayed his ability to do impressions. And I think of both of you guys as very talented impressionists. But I guess when you're comparing yourself to like, you know, the best of the best.
Right. And, you know, hair and makeup helps out with that a lot in wardrobe. But I think as we were both just like, and also it's kind of what you're drawn to. Sometimes when I see a great impression, I'm like, that's really spot on. As if it doesn't necessarily make me laugh, as like the alien from Spaceballs makes me laugh.
Right. Well, that's the thing about some of those. I mean, the cast that I grew up with was, you know, like Mike Myers, the Dana Carvey cast, and I said this to Bobby too. His impressions remind me a lot of Dana Carvey's. In that he captures an essence of a real essence.
Right.
You know, they're not maybe like Daryl Hammond specific, but there is a specificity that is like really like capturing that.
And I think Dana Carvey too, just like found something funny that wouldn't have seen otherwise.
And he amplified it. He just highlighted it.
Yeah.
Totally. Who are you very confident doing? I mean, who would you say, like, who would you audition with if you had to audition now for SNL?
The only one I really felt like, oh, this is an obvious easy one was that lady from Michigan witness with Giuliani. Otherwise, I mean, I don't necessarily, I guess like Susan Collins, I was sort of good. And then I will say the first time I ever felt like I can do an impression was Sarah Koenig, because I had listened to Serial so much. Yes. And it was like, that's so in my head. And I got to meet her and she was very like, didn't know if we were making fun of her or not. I had to like tell her over and over, like, no, we love you. You're in my head. I wouldn't listen to it if I thought you were a joke.
How does she express that to you? How does somebody like Sarah Koenig express that insecurity?
She was kind of I recognize it because of when I have it in myself, just feeling a little self-conscious and not sure. So then I feel like I probably went overboard to tell her how much it probably looked like I was trying to take her home or something.
Yeah. Have you ever had, have you ever done anybody to them on the show? Have you ever had that moment?
Stormy Daniels was on the show, but I didn't play her.
Oh, okay.
I think I played Melania that episode. But
Oh, funny.
That's funny. Stormy Daniels is as close as I've gotten.
What do people, come after you for doing any sort of politicized thing? No.
No, not really. I mean, even the one time I met Melania, she seemed to be okay with it. And I think even like when, no matter who I'm playing, it's still like, we're trying to do, I'm not a real, I would not want to feel like I made somebody feel terrible about themselves.
Yeah.
About something like, that they look about their looks or something. So I think it's like, right. I don't want to hit below the belt. And I think there's always something when I'm doing an even if it's like someone I may not love as a human being,
yes.
There's something that I love that they do.
It was interesting to read about your brother in the book and your experience growing up and that he just seemed like he had such a hard time. Obviously he's doing great yeah. now. He's found love, which is so nice to hear. He seems like a really good person, but that he was so bullied as a kid. I do you think that informed your own sense of humor and your own comedic drive?
Oh, you know what? Probably. That probably has something to do with it. But I think also just like there are, you know, the things that like stick in your head. I definitely, when you think about any time you maybe hurt somebody, especially like as kids, when you don't realize it, like, and you've made, you know, like I can think of the kids that I wasn't nice to or something, even if it was just one moment and it's like,
totally
keep me up at night, you know?
I know.
It just doesn't feel good to hurt someone.
It's
maybe like for a split second when you're in a fight with them, but it doesn't otherwise. It's like not a good feeling.
I know. Even when I do it on the road, you get a moment of like anger. It never feels, it's never settling. It never settles into something other than like a distaste, you know?
Yeah.
There's a great George Saunders essay that it was commencement speech for maybe Rutgers or something. I forget the school. It might've been Rutgers, but it's about that. It's all about his, the regrets that he has, the moments of inaction that he regrets in terms of standing up for kids or when he was tacitly participating in any kind of like making fun of like lessening of somebody's agency. It's really beautiful. I'd encourage anyone to read it, but it reminds me of what we're talking about. Yeah, I have the same.
I definitely even like, and I think something I am proud of too, it's like of all the things, like when I can think about all the things I'm not good at and it's like, I could fill 3 books and then it's like,
I can't wait.
Here's everything I'm not good at. I was pretty good, I think, at sticking up for people too, just like as a natural, like, why aren't we all, doesn't this make the most sense? And I remember, I won one of my only awards in life was a Happiness Club award.
I like the way you said that.
Well, because I remember the whole time being like, I don't know what this is, and I don't quite know what it's for. And it was my favorite teacher, Mrs. Smith, in sixth grade, gave it to me, and she was nervous when she gave a speech, and she called me Stephanie the whole time. And then I found out it was like because I hung out with like kids with developmental disabilities at lunchtime or something, and I was like, I get an award for that. I thought I did something cool, or I thought I like, you know, wrote a great essay.
Yeah, well, it is cool. I mean, looking back, you can probably see how cool that is. Like at the time,
right? But it was just like at the right. It was like, I'm going to go talk to these kids today. You know,
what was this correspondence dinner like? I've that to me seems like it potentially the scariest room imaginable. Was there anybody that was so intimidating to make fun of that was even tough to get through, or was it just like once you were up there, you just kind of like start flying?
You know, it was probably different because I'm not a stand-up, so I didn't feel like I had pressure to be a stand-up, and everything that I was saying made me laugh a lot, and I think it was like I didn't look at it as like this is a way to further my career or anything. It was like this is a chance to do this with Obama as president. And I just thought the world of Barack Obama and still do. And was like, you know, big, I had his, like, I had a little Barack Obama sticker on my purse when he was running for Senate. And I remember in California, I was like, what does that mean? And I'd be like, well, that's Barack Obama. And then like to sit next to Michelle Obama. You're going to hear about him. Right. So yeah. Then I was like, I have to say yes to this because it's Obama. And actually They asked me in such a weird way. My dad texted me and he said, my friend from the Tribune asked if you wanted to do the correspondence dinner. And I thought he meant himself. And I was like, cool, dad, you should do it. Like at a dinner or like go or something. And he went, no, they want you to host it. And I was like, that can't be real. Weird. It couldn't have come through my dad. But somehow it was. And it was like, I was in a really low place because I'd been dumped earlier. And it was like heartbroken. I like had to go to California for the summer and like live on the top of a hill. And I was just at a very low place. And they asked me and it was sort of like, I have to say yes, because if I don't want to say no to something while I'm feeling like this about myself. And, it was something that had scared me. And so it was like, at least it was distracting and kind of lifted me up a bit.
In a weird way, it's probably a good time to do something like that. It's a good, it's probably a good atmosphere to do that in.
Yes. And it was, I mean, the other thing, I guess, was like, I was asked in August and it wasn't until April. So it was, sure, I'll do it. I'll figure it out by then. Future me has it.
Future me can
right
do
now
anything.
Doesn't think about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I do that all the time. What is your family's relationship with your fame and with SNL? I mean, I know you talk about it in the book a little bit, and certainly Owen and Lita were so supportive. They were always at the shows, and I love how you describe that and their support. But do you have any family members or any people in your life that got kind of weird with it or had a strange relationship with it?
No, I don't think I do. I think my parents, it's fun every now and then I'll check their Facebook or something. And it's like, that's where I can see all the things they may not say to me all the time. Yeah. But it's like, oh, you're proud of me. You like it.
I see you.
Busted.
Busted. Yeah, totally. Oh, that's cute. That's sweet. What do they think of Schmigadoon? It just premiered on Apple TV. I got to see it. I can't wait.
They love it. I think, I made them both watch it in one sitting. With me. So I think my mom is fun. Like it took her, I think she's enjoyed it more not sitting next to me.
Yeah.
And it's the first thing we do when we see each other. So now she's like, then she'll text me about it. Like, I loved that, whatever. And I, my grandmother, who is 90, late 90s, she's my one living relative, and she's my mom's stepmom. So not good genes in my family.
but she, not until
she loved
now.
It. She was like, her daughter showed it. She said, well, I don't have the Apple station, but if I can buy this in any way, because I'd love to support or something. It was really cute.
What were you watching as a kid? What were your, what did you grow up really being inspired by besides SNL?
Well, I watched a lot of musicals, obviously on, VHS, that's what we'd rent. And my parents loved comedy. So we had SNL commercials. My mom had the Gilda special. My dad would show us like Marx Brothers and Monty Python.
Oh, us too. We loved it.
And my brother and I would watch, we watched a lot of comedy in like The State, Upright Citizens Brigade. I love Strangers with Candy. I guess I was a little older then. And then I also loved talk shows and dating shows. Before reality TV, I was already a reality TV nut.
The best,
like, I gotta get home and put on Maury.
Oh my God. Well, they were such great characters. They were the best characters.
Yeah. Ridiculous.
I still feel that way about reality shows. But like, now it strikes me, there's something even more interesting in a way that the Bachelors and the Bachelorettes, they all are vying to be famous to some degree. And so they're all like performing.
Right. It's less interesting to me because of that.
Yeah, because of that. It's like bad improv.
Well, you just know it's like this is like just an extension of Instagram to you to be like a brand whatever person. I want to see somebody who's off their rocker invested in this.
It still happens, but it's rare. You're right. It's rare.
Yeah.
I will say
it's like every now and then I'll watch Bachelor. And I do love the first part. I mean, I think that's like that competition and that fear of being sent home is like, you can't fake that. That's very real. And that's fun to me. But the rest of it,
really
I don't care about. But then I think like there are certainly shows where it's it's real and it's there. 90 Day Fiancé.
90 Day Fiancé. Oh, Colt and Larissa.
Oh my God.
My brother.
Insane. One of the funniest things I've ever seen in my entire life.
The more consumed.
Yeah, because
he
you're lazy and you're fat, Colty. Okay. Okay. Okay.
That's your opinion, Larissa. that's my colder. Well, that's just
what
she like
said.
Your
whoever
opinion.
Goes against the queen will die.
Colty.
Wasn't that one?
Will
of
die.
Colty.
Yeah. Colty Biggie. You're big. I remember she got a car. She wanted a car, and she was like, I wanted this car that's a biggie and blacky.
Yes, I follow her on Instagram now.
Oh, really? Amazing.
I love it.
My brother got me for my birthday, you know that Cameo app?
Mm-hmm.
He got me one from, I don't know if you saw the season with Zied.
Of course.
He's like, yes. Yeah.
Oh, he got me Zied. Baby, I want to kiss you, sexy baby. Oh, Zied.
yes. I loved when he would answer her questions.
Pants. What do you say? A red band? He's been on a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. He sent, so I gotta send it to you. He sent me one. He sent me a Cameo. It was very sweet.
Wow.
Happy birthday to Justin. It's amazing.
Now, did he do it like up close? Was it as sexy?
Yes.
As those it was in the early videos that Rebecca loved?
It was in, oh my God, those were crazy. But then she was sending him ones with the crazy filter.
Uh-huh.
Remember that?
Of course.
Yeah.
Just so many good ones. And Angela and Michael, obviously.
Oh my God. And the one from the Pacific Northwest, who was that? Michael and the Ukrainian
used,
woman.
Who is like this jaw like this.
Uncle Bo. I love Bo.
Uncle Bo. Oh my God. I was so happy to see Uncle Bo survived COVID. I know that's like a dark thing to say, but I mean it.
No, I know. I love when she says to me, because I was just in Bulgaria and I noticed this about a lot of Bulgarians, how honest they are and how honest she was with Bo when she's. I don't know if you remember that she was saying goodbye to him, and he's like, okay. And he's like, well, maybe I'll see you again.
Yeah.
She goes, no, I will not. I will never see you. No. There was just something so like, yeah, you're not going to see each other. Oh, God.
They're so good. Well, and the Latin women, I can't believe those men. It's just like, I can't believe they are in these relationships where I'm like, you are so emasculated. I'm feeling awkward watching this. Also, what is her name from Michigan?
Oh, who goes to Belize?
Has Ryan, yeah. And then his cousin.
Yeah. Well, because now Ryan.
Because then Ryan doesn't wear a robber. So Ryan told me he's wearing a robber and he wasn't.
Yeah, and that's really good.
Oh, these are expensive undies.
That's
Ryan.
And then
he leaves, and then she goes with the cousin.
Well, he. What the hell is his name?
It's like, Harrison.
Harrison. Oh, Harrison is actually a much better lover.
I should have had him. Yeah, I couldn't believe. Yeah. I got you nice watches and robbers. Yeah. Like that's how I want to travel from now on. I want to bring someone underwear, undies, watches, and robbers.
That's right.
And $1,000 for snacks.
And there's
she gave him $100 for snacks.
That's right. and then got mad and then would use that, then would weaponize that, throw it back in his face. Well, I gave your, and then was giving his family so much money. I mean, like, it was dark, but like, it's sometimes that's a perfect example of, I never know who to,
right.
Who's darker in that situation.
And a lot of them, I just think it's like, I think they are like, I root for them. And it's like people that want love and they want a relationship and it's been hard. And there's just something about like someone who comes from somewhere else that appeals to them. And so it's like
aspirational.
It's not just all like fake and shitty. It's there's something very sweet too. And you root for them.
Yeah. And or it's like Harrison. Now I'm remembering Harrison was just like, I want to go to America. Like he was like pretty honest.
Yeah.
He was like, and she was like, Harrison, do you think you're ready to come with me to Michigan? Stephanie, that was her name. Stephanie.
Stephanie, that's what I want. And she's so Michigan. She's so Stephanie. Yes. I can hula hoop. Yes. Here's the Ryan loved. Yeah.
That's right. Something happened with her company recently. She's getting sued.
Wait, her company?
Yeah, she has that like cosmetic
her
thing.
Aesthetic, yeah.
Yeah, and they were making false claims about it being able to prevent COVID, I think.
Wow, of course.
Something about it. Yeah. It's very Stephanie. It's on brand.
Yeah.
Oh, but Harrison's been so supportive.
I appreciate that. I needed that. That's good. I love talking 90 day.
That Michigan accent's so good. I guess you grew up near Michigan, but
very near Michigan, like an hour drive or something. And everybody who had any money or what I considered money growing up had a house in Michigan.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And cars. They would say they're cars. They had nice cars.
Nice cars. And Wisconsin was over there, too. Lake Geneva. Oh, yeah. Well, oh, sure. Yeah.
So you grew up doing that? You grew up knowing how to do, you just had an ear for those.
Well, I think it was like, that's how everybody, even like Chicago, it's sort of similar. Yeah, we go a bit harder. Like
you naturally have a lateral.
Yes. I naturally have the most beautiful accent in the world.
Yes.
The most beautiful vowel sounds, mom and dad.
Dad. Yes. I have a little bit. Connecticut weirdly has a flat A.
Yes.
As well.
There's some weird thing like Buffalo. Every now and then I'll hear Buffalo and I think it's some in Chicago.
Yes, me too. I do that. I it's probably a way to show off, but and oftentimes I'm right. I'm pretty good at like pinpointing, like at least approximating where somebody's from. And it's fun. I guess it's something that I like just get off on a little bit where they're like, how'd you know that? But I did it yesterday, for example, and on set, and I said, I didn't know you were from Canada. I did it really confidently because somebody had said, sorry. He was. So I said, oh, sorry, I didn't mean to. I said, I didn't know you were from Canada. And he said, I'm not. Why would you just why would you just say that?
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do, 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 shaboom.
Hiring? Well, with Indeed, your search is over, because you can get rid of the search and just match. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. That's because Indeed leverages over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day. It's constantly learning from your preferences. Basically, the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/long. Just go to Indeed.com/long right now and support the show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/long. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Want to hear a really satisfying sound? Here it is. That's the sound I hear when I'm learning a new language with Babbel. And if you want to learn a new language this year, it'll be one of your favorite sounds too. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations. With Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons that are handcrafted by over 200 language experts, you can start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. I've been loving learning Spanish because I love traveling to Spanish-speaking countries, and I just want to be better at communicating with the people. I love the people there, and I want to be able to get to know them better. I also love the food, so I'd like to be better at ordering food so I don't order the wrong thing. They teach you very practical, real-world language skills. And here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/long. Get 55% off at babbel.com/long, spelled babbel.com/long. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom and up and we'll meet again.
Cecily, what is your most commonly used emoji, would you say?
Ooh, that's a good one. Let's see. Well, I guess the heart. And then I like the dancing lady.
Oh, yeah. People like that one. Yeah.
I like the clown. I like the cowboy.
Uh-huh. What context do you use the cowboy?
I guess sometimes if I use like cowboy and clown together. like when I'm like, know that I'm saying something kind of goofy.
That's funny.
Yeah. Like, and the guy with the sunglasses. It's like, that's when I'm proud of what I said. Sunglass guy, clown, cowboy.
Oh, that's funny. I've been doing a lot of this one, the gritted teeth.
This guy I do a lot. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That means that is a very much an emotion for me. Like,
Totally.
Yeah. I'm excited about that.
Yes. Or I'll say it, like if I say something on Instagram that I'm like, that might be taken the wrong way. Just know that I also know it's a little like iffy.
Yeah.
Like, either it's unfunny or whatever. Like, if you could be a professional athlete, what sport would you play?
Oh, soccer, hands down.
Soccer. Yeah. Yeah. That's so cool that you know those ladies, Megan Rapinoe, and they sound really amazing. I didn't know Megan Rapinoe was the first one to kneel at the anthem. That's really cool.
They're just, they really are diverse in a lot of ways. And that is such like I hate saying that word, especially, well, I don't hate saying the word. I hate saying the word around certain people, and that it's like, but I do think they are in the best way, that it's like, there's just, they come from everywhere and they represent everyone and they really stand for it. And then they're really, really good.
They're really good. Right. Yeah.
And it's just fun to watch people good at what they do in any sport, really. Even if I'm like, I don't get this sport, but wow, that guy's really good at curling.
I know. It's so funny. Every 4 years, it's like I get so into these sports that and then for the next four, I kind of forget about. But there's just, you're right. There's something about seeing somebody at that peak physical form.
Yeah.
Doing something that you could technically do. I mean, we could all technically do those things.
I don't know that I could even technically do any of it.
Well, like a version
without
of it.
Hurting myself horribly. Yeah.
Yeah. If you could have one snack food for the rest of your life, what would it be? Your go-to snack food?
It would either be like crackers, and I make this goat cheese and garlic and oil. Cheese. I should just say cheese.
Yeah. Cheese. Got some great cheese shop. Yeah. New York. I'm now missing New York. I hate the smell of really like strong cheese, like pungent cheese.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like going to Paris, it's like, well, I'm going to go stop in the fart shop for a second.
Yes, that's it. How do people not? People are always so incredulous with me when I tell them that I don't like those. It's like, but you've smelled farts and you haven't even smelled farts. And like, you know that it's at least like, as you might say, adjacent to a fart.
Yeah, it's certainly fart adjacent.
Yes, yeah. What is your, this is a very personal question. I don't mean to just throw it at you, but do you want to have kids? Are kids, do you think in your future?
I don't know. I mean, it's like, biologically, it's getting to be that's like the decisions being made for me. But I still am like, there was like a year when I got my dog and I'm like, I love my dog so much. And she's a rescue dog. And so it's always, I'm not afraid of adoption as something, but I'm just not there yet.
Yeah. No. Okay. I was asking weirdly because I'm always curious what movie people would want, would be most excited to introduce to their kids, you know, like, you know, what's the movie that was so special to you growing up that you're like, oh, God, it'd be nice to have a kid one day and show them this.
That's a great thought. I don't have that in my head right at this moment. But that's like, that's something that's like fun to think about. And
I know. Yeah. Well, think about it. Yeah. Yeah. Curious. What is your go-to? Oh, you talk about karaoke, singing karaoke. What is your go-to song? What is your like showstopper?
I think I normally can rely on Dreams by the Cranberries and
best.
Something by Patsy Cline.
Oh, great. Yeah. Oh, I love that song. I fucking love that song. I remember it was in the trailer for Boys on the Side. Remember that trailer?
Oh, yeah. I don't remember the trailer. I didn't remember the movie till you said it right now.
Oh, man. I love that song. I fucking love it.
It's such a great song.
It's
genuinely like a perfect song.
It makes you feel
so much immediately. You hear the beginning, like it's just a perfect song.
I'm feeling it now. I'm hearing it now, and it really feels
like I'm getting goosebumps. Yeah,
yes, this is the best part of this podcast. I remember you said again another great part of the book when you talk about being able to laugh for the first time and like enjoy a moment for the first time in a while and like and you guys dancing around the upstate house. putting on, and you put on the perfect song. I love how you describe putting on the perfect song, that Lou Reed song.
Yeah.
And the like, and knowing that it's bringing joy to people. That there is truly. I've lately had that thought. Oh God, it feels good to put on the perfect song for a group.
Oh,
of people.
Oh yeah.
I love that. Who was your first celebrity crush?
I had like two when I had a bulletin board up, and then like other girls I knew had pictures on it. So I was like, well, I'll put two pictures on the bulletin board. And my two pictures were Leonardo DiCaprio and Brad Renfro.
Brad was really, yeah. What a sad situation.
Awful. Yeah.
Awful. Yeah. Sorry. Sorry.
No, I'm the one who says it, but I'm still like, no. But I think it's like nice to, he was my crush. I thought he was like such a good actor and like a cool bad boy.
He was a bad boy. Yeah. I like to say I'm the bad boy of such and such. So like my brother was getting like a he's going to love me telling you this. His fiance was putting a mask on him last night, like a facial mask.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, you're like the bad boy of facial masks. Like using the bad boy of something. If you had to get a tattoo, what would you get?
I just shouldn't. I mean, I guess I could get, you know, at this point it would be like a bird or something to.
Oh, for obvious, Owen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I used to want, like, I wish I could get a tattoo. If tattoos lasted for a year, I would do full body tattoos.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
What would you get in there for the next year, the next coming year?
I mean, anything I found funny at the moment. I was like, every now and then I'll see someone who's got like a full chest tattoo. And I just think it's so pretty. And I'm like, I wish I could do that for a year.
I know. Yeah, me too. It's maybe there is that the technology. Or you can develop it.
I'm going to spend the rest of my life developing that.
Yeah, temporary tattoos. What is your favorite fruit, would you say?
Favorite fruit? Strawberries.
Yeah, perfect.
Easy.
Strawberries. Okay. Who do you want to play you in your biopic?
Me. I don't know.
You should. Strawberries are also pretty easy to grow.
I'm starting to grow them, but I think they're not like, are they super easy? I thought you have to like, anything that takes an extra step is kind of, I go like, I don't know anymore if I'm going to grow these. I think you have to thin them out, right? And it's like a next year crop.
It is. Well, mine are growing from last season, but I say that only because Cecily, I love gardening, but if I can do it, truly, I'm not being selfish.
No, I believe
you.
Yeah.
Anybody can do it. Yeah.
Did you move your strawberries, or you just like you started to grow them last year and now they're growing back and you have strawberries?
They're growing back. Okay. They're great. And then like I have wild strawberries up in Massachusetts and but they're the little kind of like they're different. They're not like obviously like big juicy ones. They're kind of like little.
I know. Whatever. But good.
Yeah. Yeah,
they're all good.
Oh, delicious. And again, that like you say, like you described, the feeling of just picking anything.
Yes, and it's fresh. Like you don't realize how much a difference that makes.
Oh, I know. I know. Who is your favorite Muppet growing up?
Probably Miss Piggy.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. Did you do those voices at all? I don't know why I'm so hung up on your voices. I think you do great impressions.
Well,
I
feel like I don't know them well enough, but I feel like there was a moment one day we were all kind of joking with Melissa Villaseñor and she was like,
brilliant.
Melissa meeting Kermit. And I was like, hey, Melissa. Oh, hey, Kermit. And sort of just.
Yeah, that's good. That's really funny. She does have a little of that in her voice.
And then I feel like my dog is a little like Miss Piggy. I can't do a great one, but it's just a like, hey, yeah, Kermit.
Yeah.
Yeah. My dog hits a lot and her affection involves like hitting you.
That's cute. What kind of dog is it? The rescue, but what do you know? What kind, roughly?
She's like part rat, part pig. I think she's definitely a spaniel mix, and I know she has Havanese in her from the two DNA tests that I gave her. I give myself three, my dog two, my parents one. Yeah, I've got identity issues.
Yeah, it's got to say something. I don't want to dig too deep, but what is your go-to pizza topping?
Cheese and garlic and more cheese.
Oh, yeah. Great. You would love a place here called Pepe's. Pepe's in Connecticut. Have you been there?
No.
Pepe's is in, there are a couple now. There's one in New, it's the original's in New Haven, but they have a great summer pie. If you're in Connecticut ever.
I mean, the thing is like, I don't know that I've met a pizza I don't like yet.
Yeah. I hear you. Dogs or cats?
Dogs. Easy.
Beatles or the Rolling Stones?
I'm going to say Beatles. I have a big Beatles family. And I just the other night had like a fun Beatles night.
Ah, that Hulu. Oh, if you could, right now you're at a bar, what are the first few songs? Like what would you put on? If you were there with Letty and Owen and your friends, what would you want to hear?
Sure. I think I would. I always love like Let It Be, that album.
Yes.
But I also like Come Together. I listen, and then I listen to a lot of John Lennon alone too. I love Yoko.
Me too.
But Beatles, I mean, anything White Album, and I love the full Let It Be.
Yes, the full album. I was just talking about the White Album. The how disparate the songs. How varied those
Dear
songs
Prudence.
Are.
I'm gonna say, like today, what I would love is Dear Prudence. Whenever there's like a storm, I remember like being in Chicago, and if there was like a big thunderstorm, just putting on Dear Prudence felt like, oh, this is so cinematic.
Oh, totally. Once you come out to play. Yeah. you know, Cecily, that's about I think it's about when they were in India. Do you know what they wrote that song because of Mia Farrow and her sister, her younger sister, who apparently was even more charming than she was. Prudence wouldn't come out of her room. She was just like meditating the whole time. She was there to meditate with a Maharaji, and like all the rock stars, Donovan, all the Beatles, whoever was there was like, they all wanted to, you know, her to come out.
Please. Yeah. Stop meditating for a second, Prudence.
I heard another one you'd like about Sexy Sadie, which is
my god. Yes, thank you for bringing that. And actually, so I have a connection with that one because my very good friend Shane, who I was close with in high school and I'm still close with, but when I was dropping out and really depressed, he made me a great mixtape and it had Sexy Sadie on it. And I just remember listening to it over and over.
Me too. Yeah. Falling in love with that song and feeling kind of like it was dangerous and sexy, obviously. And I had so many. Yeah. It's such a great association with it. And so maybe this isn't good to hear, like, where do songs come from? But I just learned, a friend of mine told me that, because they're reading a book about the Beatles, that it was Lennon's like disillusionment with the Maharaji. In India, because he saw that the Maharaji, he had held him up to be this like, you know, pillar of spirituality. And in fact, the Maharaji just wanted to like, fuck. He just wanted to get his groove on it.
A lot of religions end up being like that.
Yeah, for power and for like girls and stuff. And so the original lyric was Maharaji.
Wow.
What have you done? So if you listen to that song now in that context, it's really interesting. You made a fool of everyone. It was actually like a negative thing. And that's
really cool. I think about, I really love Across the Universe, but I love Fiona Apple's version. And I think like I read somewhere, like John Lennon was never happy with any of the recordings, but they put that one on the album anyway. And I like to think that John Lennon would have been like, that's it with Fiona Apple's version.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah. I wonder that about covers. I asked on the show, I asked Sarah Bareilles about that, about doing a cover. Somebody, she does a great Yellow Brick Road. If you ever see Goodbye Yellow Brick Road.
I love Sarah Bareilles too. I mean,
this will melt your heart, this version of it. But she described that, it being like, but she also was like very confident in it, in the song. But when she played it for Elton John.
Yeah.
And she was like, he was nice about it. I was like, I think he was. Because it made it better. It was like, we were watching that Whitney Houston documentary last night. And like, I wonder how Dolly Parton feels about what Whitney Houston did to, you know.
I feel like she must.
She must.
Love it. You have to.
Yeah.
If Whitney Houston sang anything that I'd ever been close to, I'd love it. I'd brag about it for the rest of my life.
You have to. Okay. Well, man, that's a, sorry about that tangent. Ketchup or mustard. Back to the usual boring.
Ketchup or mustard. Mustard. Yeah. You know, I'm a Chicago gal. I got to say mustard.
Oh yeah. Okay. Spicy mustard then, huh?
Mm-hmm. And I just find I use it, even if it's like, if I ever use ketchup, I'm mixing mustard in.
Okay. I've been using it a lot more in cooking. Like I made a meatloaf, not to brag, in like a glaze or something.
It's great. And when it's like, you'll never use ketchup in cooking. And if you are, you're not making food for me.
You should be disowned by any Italian relative.
Yes.
That you have. Well, this was so fun, Cecily. I can't thank you enough for this book. And we're going to encourage people to, again, I'm Bob Wiley with Baby Steps. it's the horse sense.
And I'm Siggy.
Yeah. You are Siggy. That's funny. It's really beautiful, really honest. And I just so thank you. Thank you for sharing your experience.
Thank you. And thank you for reading it and having me on.
I'm so glad. I've been a fan of yours for a while. And so I'm glad.
Likewise. I feel like we've always gotten along too.
We have. Yeah. I think we have. I can't wait to.
You got a good spirit to you, kid. Yeah.
Likewise, pal. Yeah, truly, this has been really fun.
Two bad boys.
That's right. I'm the bad boy of...
We're just a couple of bad boys, yeah.
Bad boys of conversation. well, thanks. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you.
See you, Cecily.
So that happened.
Oh, my God.
That happened.
So, yeah.
Well, that's... No, I was trying to do... She has a little. Yeah. I wasn't doing her. I was doing like her doing a character.
What character?
It's the overdone Cecily Strong impression.
Uh huh.
She's kind of like, she's got a natural Chicago.
It's not nearly that strong. But yeah,
I don't know why I want to do like, because she does very like.
It's hard to do a subtle. Maybe it's this. It's hard to do a subtle Chicago accent.
It is.
You kind of have to lean into it.
Well, yeah. So that happened. But you can hear it in her voice, right?
I could hear it. Yeah, for sure. But I'm not good at impressions, so I can't do it.
Well, I guess I'm not either.
That happened.
It's hard. You're right. Maybe that's
hard.
What it is.
It's hard to do a subtle Chicago. A hint of it.
You know who has a subtle Chicago? Is Jake Johnson, friend of the show.
I would say his is stronger.
Yeah, maybe.
She also has kind of like, this is going to maybe sound insulting, but I don't know how else to say this. She has kind of like a lazy voice.
Yeah.
Kind of like Lorraine in, older Lorraine in Back to the Future.
Back to the Future. Oh, my God.
Your Uncle Joey didn't make parole again.
Yeah, my gosh, she does. She does sound like that.
A little bit. Just a little bit.
There's something also relaxing about her voice, I think.
Yeah,
I found it very relaxing. And she is, as you can hear, I thought she's very honest. She's very...
She's great. I really liked her. Yeah. She's like friend goals for me. Like, I want to be her friend.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. I like, you know what I really like? When really funny people don't try to be funny.
Totally.
It's the best.
Yeah.
And then it comes out organically.
Exactly.
Here and there.
And then you earn it.
There's not even a hint of performance.
That's true.
Which is really nice.
That's
and refreshing.
True. It was like it was present without being, you're right, performative.
It's like she has nothing to prove. You know, it's like she knows she's funny.
And that sometimes
she's just not hammy.
That can trip me up a little bit sometimes when somebody is, because it demands an equal amount of presence from you,
right?
And that can be intimidating.
And it made me want to, for sure, made me want to read her book. And I'm impressed that you didn't do a book report because I know how into the book you were.
Oh my God, I thought I had.
Oh really?
Yeah. Oh good.
I didn't think you did.
I'm so
In fact, to the
easy.
Point where I kind of wish you had a little bit, just so I like knew a bit more about the book.
Okay, that's good to know.
I mean, I pieced it together. I figured out that her cousin had passed away and was written during the pandemic. But I didn't really know. I should have done my own research.
Well, should we have done more in the intro?
No.
About the book? Did we do enough?
Yeah, I mean, you talked about what you wrote it during the pandemic and her cousin.
It's journal form. But then she goes back in time. I mean, she uses the pandemic and the death of her cousin as kind of like a catalyst to examine her own life and her own past. It's, again, it's like I said this to her when we were talking, but there's something very strange about, I don't think I expressed how strange it felt to know so much about somebody, such personal details about mm-hmm. somebody. And
intimate detail. Like,
oh my God.
Like her thoughts on death and her experiences with death.
And her parents and how she feels about her loved ones who have passed away and herself and like moments of like weakness that she's very honest about in the book. She talks about like, we talked about this. She details, I thought this was interesting, all the texts that she wanted to send to this guy that was like withholding affection from her. And I thought some of them are, I mean, they're funny, I can see how they might be perceived as embarrassing. I can see how they might cause embarrassment.
Uh-huh.
But she really like puts it all out there. And I thought very relatable.
I thought that was interesting that she said that she considers herself a shy introvert. But once she's, you know, comfortable with someone or in a situation, she's like an open book.
Yeah.
It's strange that someone that funny
would be shy.
Would ever describe themselves as being a shy introvert. But she did seem a bit introverted near the beginning of the conversation.
She did, right? Yeah.
Someone who is that funny, that good at impressions and making people laugh professionally. It's strange when that person is introverted.
It is. Strange. I know. But it makes me feel like she puts it all out there. You know, like, I think there's something a little bit more, I don't know, authentic about her skills as a performer.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what it is?
Maybe
it's like not even worth examining, that it's just like a certain type of person that like they perform. I mean, when they perform, they perform. And
All that, the death talk made me realize, because, you know, I'm scared of death. You don't both have to be scared of death. But I realized that, you know, getting to a point in your life where not only are you not scared of it, but you're open to the idea of it and like comfortable with it happening, not that you want it to happen. Getting to that place mentally and emotionally when it comes to death feels like by far the biggest goal of my life. Like,
I know.
If that's the one thing that I really like, the one goal that I set out and I accomplish it, that's by far the best news that I could have.
I feel the same way.
Like, how do you get to that point?
I think meditation helps. We talked about that on the Michael Pollan episode, this letting go of the ego. I mean, the people who did the psilocybin treatments with the Michael Pollan that he talks about in his book, who were facing death, the ones that overcame their fear of death, I think did so by removing themselves from the ego, divorcing yourself from like the attachment to life.
So you're telling me just to do a bunch of drugs?
Yeah, do mushrooms and meditate.
You know, speaking of the Michael Pollan episode, Mom texted me the other day. She said something like, I can't get my earbuds to work on my phone. So everyone around me on my walk had to listen to your podcast, Michael Pollan episode. And she wrote, P.S., don't do any more mushrooms.
That's
because
really
I guess
funny.
I had said that I did it. Yeah,
I kind of remember that. She just said another funny one about her earbud. What's wrong with her earbuds? Why can't she figure that out? She just said, she wrote to both of us, out of nowhere. This is unrelated to anything. I charged the earbuds, put them in my ears, turned on your podcast, no sound through buds. Now what? And you said, I'll have to show you in person.
I feel like doing tech support for them has become almost my full-time job now. It's every day. There's something.
I know. We're like,
it's definitely a part-time job.
Well, and the funny part is that
pro bono.
We are wildly unqualified for it.
Yeah.
We're terrible with technology.
9 times out of 10, she'll ask me something, and I don't want to be rude, but I want to say, first Google that unplug it and plug it back in, or turn it off, turn it on. Beyond that, I don't really know how to fix things.
Family Feud. She said, what time's your show on? I'm just reading back through text. Give me time, station for feud, please. Sending info to friends and fam. It's like, look it up.
But you know, ultimately, this is our fault because we're the ones who haven't properly left the teat, as it were.
I know. We got a follow-up text.
Sorry to put that in your head.
That's gross.
I could have said the nest.
Apparently, I left the teat sooner than you did. We don't have to get into this.
Well, now everyone knows that.
Okay. Well, Mish can cut it out.
No, it's funny. Who cares?
Not much sooner.
I think much sooner. Oh, really? I don't want to talk about it too much, but I think I was attached to the teat for really inappropriate amount of time.
Could you ask with words?
Can I ask her?
No. Could you at the time of the teat attachment?
This is so disgusting, and I can't believe
I'm doing this. Could you be like, hey, mom?
I would like, she was like, oh, you would ask for it.
Oh, man.
Isn't that horrible?
We shouldn't shame people who do that.
No.
But I know that there's
no shame in the game. Also, in fairness, I was her last child. So I think.
Yeah.
It's not that I. I think it was.
She didn't want to let go.
She didn't want to let go.
Of the teat neater.
Right.
You know who I really want to talk to this about? Not her, but Alicia Silverstone. Because she fed her child, Matt, I think baby bird style.
Shut up.
I swear to you. She masticated.
Yes. Are you supposed to repeat that?
Oh, she talks about it.
Like, to you because you're her friend?
No. She's spoken about it publicly.
Oh, really?
In fact, she like advocates for it, I think.
Wow.
I think she's like into it.
Well, our guest today, Cecily Strong, doesn't have children.
That's true.
Even though you asked her.
Is that rude?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's a faux pas.
Wait,
she didn't seem bothered by it, but
no,
I'm.
I asked if she wanted children.
No, I think that's a faux pas, too.
Oh, it is?
I think so.
Yeah, you can't.
I mean, you weren't like. When are you going to have... I mean, you didn't, like, pressure her or anything.
No, but I was curious.
But I think you're not supposed to ask women that. It was funny how you kept trying to prompt her to do impressions. And you were like...
I know. Well...
Like the Sarah Koenig thing. But then, as luck would have it, you happened to mention 90 Day Fiancé. And she completely lit up.
She lit up.
And did all the impressions. It was amazing.
I know.
I could.
I'm so glad.
It made me think that the two of you should have a podcast about 90 Day Fiancé.
Oh, man. That'd be fun.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Well, you should be on it.
Well, I could maybe pop in here and there. But if it was the two of you, that would be really funny.
That is a good idea.
Doing impressions of them, analyzing the episodes.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Isn't it?
Because those episodes, as you know, are so rich. They like really deserve... We
could do like a daily podcast on 90 Day Fiancé.
Totally. I haven't seen it in a while.
Totally.
Well, so Christian, we talk about that, how you got me the Zied thing for my birthday.
Yes.
It's going to be tough to beat. Well, because she does a very good...
That was funny. Yes. God, she's really good.
She's really good. And she nailed that. I mean, like, that's the thing about impressions is there's a... there is something very clear. There's like an anchor to an impression. Mm-hmm. And in the case of that woman... Who's with Mike?
She doesn't open her mouth.
Yes. It's all like this, and it informs everything comes from that.
Yes,
it's a really interesting quirk, and I think the best people do that. We talked about Dana Carvey and those guys, but I usually find something that like stands out as being unique.
She is. I would say it's interesting that she likes Phil Hartman as much as she does because I think that she's the best, like the closest current cast member. To what Phil Hartman was then.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, because he would do a lot of... I mean, they're both great at impressions, and they're both attractive.
Yeah.
And when you're attractive, it's hard... Sometimes it's harder to play characters. So the impressions tend to be much more specific, and they play, like, more regular, ordinary-looking people, but they find such great nuance in those... more normal people. Does that make sense?
It does, and it's that. I think it requires more confidence to do that, to do something a little bit more nuanced, especially on that a show like that where you want to, you know, you want to really make an impact. You want to be seen. You want to be especially now. And I can think of some performers on that show who really like swing for the fences. But Phil Hartman and Cecily, I would say there's something more nuanced about. Their approach to impressions.
Should we read a letter? Oh, one little nitpicky thing before that. You said New Haven.
New Haven.
I think it's New Haven.
I said New Haven.
But then I started thinking, why is it New Haven?
New York.
Because it's New York.
Yeah, New York.
You don't say New York.
New York.
You say New York.
New Haven. I don't know why.
Do you hear the difference?
Yeah. Well, I don't know why.
I don't either. That's what I was wondering.
New York.
If you knew why.
All right. All right. God, ever since Dave Koechner, I can't stop now.
All right.
From Blair Sayer. Subject, Bladder Bros and a Would You Rather. Great. G'day, Justin and Christian. Hi, guys. My name is Blair, and I'm a longtime listener and now longtime letter writer. This is my third shot, so we'll see how we go. Wow. I'm kind of curious about the other two.
Blair, we didn't read the... I don't think we read the first two.
No? No, but she's saying she's a longtime letter writer.
Oh, so she, you think?
Oh, Blair.
I think...
I always do this. I know...
Blair Underwood's a man.
That's true. Blair Cohen is the agent.
Blair Thomas is a man.
Oh, yeah. Linda Blair, that's the last name. You're right. Maybe it's a... Okay.
No, it's probably a woman.
Though. Let's see. Let's see if there are other clues. I'm a woman. Oh.
Really?
No, I'm kidding.
Oh, dude, I can't believe I fell for that. As I was saying really, I realized you were joking.
On your face. All right, back to Blair. Whatever they may be. At present, I am in week 4 of an 8-week COVID lockdown in Western Sydney, Australia. But I'm originally from New Zealand. Justin, you have my full blessing to butcher any accents. Oh, man.
Yes.
Lockdown sucks, but it is what it is, and things could be worse for sure. I am a freelance illustrator, and I have plenty of work, a lot of beers, and heaps of good TV to get through. If anything this last couple of years has taught me, it's to keep looking for the silver linings. Last year, I dealt with my own issues with having 2 tumors removed from my bladder. I was literally turning 48 at the time. The surgery was performed on my birthday. Oh, my God. And although scary and a crazy thing to deal with, I came out all okay. That's good to hear, Blair. The cancer was aggressive but non-invasive, and they got it all at a good time. I have had clear results from checkups since. Touch wood. I will touch wood.
That's why they say touch wood instead of knock on wood.
Yeah, I didn't know that. And they say, we say touch wood down under as opposed to your knock on wood. Perfect time for an innuendo injection. Perfect time for an innuendo injection. That's funny. It would be if we could. Also, because of the obvious entry and exit point with male bladder surgery.
Male.
Okay.
Wow.
I have had to laugh when less informed friends of mine have asked if I have a scar. Okay. So that's funny. I would have asked too. I'd be a less informed friend of his. Would there be a scar? No. Also, because of the obvious entry and exit point with male bladder surgery, I have had to laugh when less informed friends of mine have asked if I have a scar.
You understand what he's saying, right?
Yeah. So
the entrance point.
It's inside
penis.
It's the penis. It's
yeah. So I think that's how you get in there.
They go through the urethra.
I think so.
Okay. Back to the letter. My point here is, as an older man who loves your show, I'm also very empathetic to your pee talk, Justin, and nodded and laughed along at your conversation with Nick Frost. There is no rule book with life, and everyone is different, but at some stage, men cross a threshold and find they pee differently, especially at night. It's something not talked about often enough, in my opinion, so thanks for your honesty here. I can't believe that had a positive effect on somebody. So glad.
Someone in Australia is all the way
in
there.
Australia, I know. That's amazing. It's something I'll tell you. Okay. It's a big part of what makes your podcast so great. And I find the laughing out loud parts good for my body and the honest parts good for my soul. Keep the great shows coming, fellas. You both seem very modest, but I hope you know your show touches something in a lot of people. God, that's so nice, Blair.
That is so nice.
Thank you, Blair Sayer. What a kind thing. Okay. On to my would you rather. All right. Would you rather have the best night's sleep of your life every night, but never dream again? Oh.
Wait. Best night's sleep or, every night.
But never. Okay, so would you rather have the best night's sleep of your life every night, but never dream again, or never have a great night's sleep ever again, but dream all the time you do sleep and remember all your dreams?
Oh.
Easy. Yeah, definitely.
I don't really care about dreams.
I mean, dreams are cool.
Cool, but I feel like my dreams are more often unsettling in some way or weird or if I'm nervous about something, I have like
anxiety
dreams. Like I didn't do, I didn't prepare for a big test or something.
So you don't often have like...
Or like an actor's nightmare. I don't know my lines in a play or something.
Yeah.
I have those
oh,
dreams.
Man, those are the worst. I have those a lot. I have those always before the first day of work.
I rarely, let me put it this way. I rarely have dreams where I wake up and I think, Oh no! I want to go back to that.
Yeah,
that was amazing. I love that dream.
I haven't had one of those in a while.
That doesn't happen a lot for me. I don't know what that says about my life.
No, or your subconscious.
That's what I'm saying.
All right. Well, so definitely, yeah, I would too. And nothing beats to have a great night of sleep every night.
Just talking to our friend James about that. How reaching a certain age, how important sleep is. Like how important it's become in my life. And I never thought a good night's sleep. I mean, it was always like, yeah, take it or leave it. I prefer good night's sleep.
Right.
But now it's like one of my favorite things to do.
And it changes the whole day, the next day.
Exactly.
You get such a great day afterwards. Okay. Apart from my night peeing, I am blessed with both. Wow. Lucky you. I've managed to sleep like a baby most of my life and frequently dream and remember most of them. God, it's so lucky, Blair. That's great. Stay safe, guys, and keep up the great podcasting. I'd buy you both a beer today if I could, just to say thanks for what you're doing. Not a Foster's, by the way. No one here in Stria drinks Foster's.
I've heard that.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's like an American Australian beer?
It's like the ad campaign has tricked us into believing that it's like all they drink in Australia.
Foster's Australian for beer. That's funny. Not a Foster's, by the way.
I'd like to have a beer with him.
I would, too.
He seems cool.
He does. And I really am not saying that because he likes the show. But
that's influenced you.
I'm sure. Because this show is, we've talked about this, it's like if somebody says, and conversely, if somebody says they don't like the show.
It would be hard to think that they're cool.
Well, forget cool. It's just like.
Someone you'd want to have a beer with.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Somebody that you would, because I would be thinking the whole time, they obviously
they don't
want to
have
me.
A beer with me.
Yes, yeah. So I'd be self-conscious.
Right.
But
that makes sense.
Yeah. So if you do like the show, I would say this about anybody who likes the show. I'd want to have a beer with them. I have a very low bar. But Blair, what a great letter. And I'd love to hear how you're doing. I hope he keeps writing.
I hope he continues to feel better, too.
I do, too.
And if you guys want to write into the show, our email address is
lifeisshort@wondery.com. And also check out Cecily's show, Schmigadoon.
Yes.
With... friend of the show, Fred Armisen.
Yes, I want to see that.
I do too.
I bet it's really good.
Great cast, and it's on Apple TV. And please read her book. You will not be disappointed.
What's the name again?
It is called "This Will All Be Over Soon." And
this podcast will all be over soon too.
Oh, great!
It's not all be over. Just this episode.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream. Ooh.
Life is Short is hosted by me, Justin Long. It is co-hosted and co-produced by you,
Christian Long.
It's also produced by Megan.
The
Monaco. Senior producer is Michelle.
Mish.
Lands. Audio engineer is
Sergio Enriquez.
And the executive producer is Amand. He's a man.
He is a man.
He identifies that way still, I think.
I believe he does.
Marshall Louis.
For Wondery.
Ooh, that's all right. I'll hear that. That sounds funny.
It's not a real one, but it's like a joke.
Okay. That's kind of what we've been telling.
One day, there was this woman in the car with a penguin.
With a penguin?
With a penguin.
Wow.
And then...
It's funny already.
And then she bumped into a cop, and the cop said, you are not allowed to have penguins in your car. Take it to the zoo.
What?
And then the next day, there was the same cop, saw the same woman, the same penguin in the car.
What?
And
she never took it to the zoo?
And the cop said, I told you to take it to the zoo.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman said, I did, and he liked it. This time we're going to the beach. Get it?
That's really funny. That's really funny. Did you get it, Percy? Did you hear that?
I didn't hear the last part.
Oh, the last part is the cop said, hey, I thought I told you to take that penguin to the zoo. And the lady who was driving said, I did. And the penguin liked it so much, next time we're going to go to the beach. You get it? So she just took the penguin to see the animals in the zoo, not to be part of the zoo. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Life is Short ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.